consumers really don't care what the technology is that's delivering them their value. They just want to have their claim paid timely. They want things to happen smoothly, whether it's done on a blockchain or some sort of other digital platform. I don't think consumers really care.
Welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted, the show dedicated to innovation in the insurance industry. Each episode, you'll get a dose of thought leadership from the industry's top business minds, influencers, innovators, and executive leaders. If you want to transform your corner of the industry and exchange innovative ideas, you need to subscribe to this podcast. Now here's your host, Abel Travis.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted Podcast, where we dive deep into insurance innovation. So a lot of you have been asking me, you know, when the discussion about blockchain is going to be released, today's discussion is going to be focused on blockchain and the use cases in insurance and also insurance innovation. So, you know, I had the opportunity to talk to Nick Gerhardt, the Chief Administrative Officer of the Farm Bureau Financial, and also the former Commissioner of the Iowa Division of Insurance. So we're going to talk about that, you know, as I mentioned, some of the use cases and, you know, just to help you get an understanding of the implications of blockchain for the insurance industry. But before we jump in, I want to recognize the sponsor of this episode of the podcast, and that's Vortex Legal.
Innovation in the insurance field is exciting, and Vortex Legal is a unique and proven solution to help improve a company's loss ratio by substantially reducing legal expenses. Their nationwide network of local attorneys attend the voluminous and routine and predictable hearings for a flat rate, not an hourly rate. So Vortex Legal's solution works with both staff counsel offices as well as outside law firms. They've saved many carriers millions of dollars. So if you want to learn more, just contact Jonathan Broder at 954-473-2648 or visit vortexlegal.com.
Now, I want to introduce my guest, and that's Nick Gerhardt, the current Chief Administrative Officer for Farm Bureau Financial and the former Commissioner for the Iowa Division of Insurance. Nick, it's a pleasure to have you here on the podcast today. Welcome.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you know, so Nick, you know, I know we want to dig into the topic of blockchain and insurance, but before we dig into that topic, you know, I'd love for you to share a little bit about your background and your history within the insurance industry.
Yeah, you bet. You know, I like most people, I got into the business of insurance completely by accident. I thought I'd be running a hospital by this point in my career, to be honest with you. So, you know, I stumbled into it back in 2003. And in the life and annuity business, primarily was in that for 7 or 8 years. I got tapped to be insurance commissioner in the state of Iowa, as you noted, and spent 4 years in that office doing a lot of different things. I focused on consumer protection issues. I focused on building kind of a startup ecosystem in the Des Moines area with the Global Insurance Symposium and the Accelerator. I was chairman of the A Committee at the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, did the Federal Advisory Committee of Insurance as well, and then, you know, really got into some of the innovation space because I was just intrigued by a lot of the things I was reading about and seeing, and realized, you know, while we were telling the industry that they need to keep up with the times, you know, I kind of had the epiphany that regulators probably did too. So I spent quite a bit of time on that, and then I left office in late 2016 and took this role as Chief Administrative Officer at FBL Financial, Farm Bureau Financial Services. And here I have corporate planning strategy, human resources, the health services, government affairs, and kind of whatever else the CEO wants me to do. So I, again, stumbled into the industry by accident, but I absolutely love it.
Yeah, you know, I could agree with you in terms of just loving what's happening in this industry, and not only what's happening, but all of the great changes that's occurring in the industry as well. So you mentioned, you know, you did some work around innovation as well, and I'd love to, you know, use that as a segue into the topic that we're going to discuss here today, and that's blockchain blockchain in general, but in particular, you know, what the implications are for the insurance industry. You know, so Nick, you know, if you don't mind, just help us set up for the audience what exactly is the premise of blockchain, and you know, just give us your perspective on what it is.
I think about the blockchain, and you read a lot about it. You know, I started getting interested in blockchain technology when I was researching Bitcoin. So that's how most people know about blockchain, is it's, you know, tied to Bitcoin. Obviously, it's the technology that underpins Bitcoin. And unless you're living under a rock, you know, everyone's heard of Bitcoin in the last, 6 to 12 months. You know, I was in on Bitcoin, several years ago and got interested really from a regulatory standpoint. And as I dug into Bitcoin, I was really more interested in the technology, again, that underpins it, the blockchain. And what a lot of people don't understand, I think, is that, you hear this and, is there one blockchain? Is it a public blockchain? Are there private blockchains? The best way that I kind of try to describe it to folks is it's a ledger. Ledgers have been around for a long time, as everybody knows, but it's a ledger that's distributed. And so it's kind of like a peer-to-peer network, and it's accessible across the whole, kind of system, if you will, whether it's a public one or private one. And with the Bitcoin blockchain, you have miners that kind of adjudicate it, through their proof-of-work algorithms and that things. There's private blockchains that, aren't being mined as well. But I always say, if I think about what the blockchain is and what it means, I don't know if anybody really knows yet. I read a paper a while ago that compared blockchain to the Wright brothers' first flight. No one really knew how important that Wright brothers' flight was. I don't think people really understand how important blockchain is yet and really what the real use cases will be. I think they're pretty profound across many enterprises, including insurance, which is, I know we're going to talk about today. But the use cases are many. There's not a lot in production. But just the idea that you could have a distributed ledger is pretty radical idea that when Bitcoin was first put out there, I don't think anybody understood the power of that underpinning technology, and certainly most people didn't understand the value that Bitcoin would someday hit. Otherwise, we all would have been buying it, right? But I do think Bitcoin has some fatal flaws, and some of the blockchain protocols out there probably have some fatal flaws, and we'll talk about that, I suppose, later.
Yeah, I really would love to dig into sort of that concept of the distributed ledger, especially as you think about it in relation to insurance. As I see it, many carriers are participating in things like consortiums really to get to the understanding of the benefits of what utilizing blockchain is going to do for the insurance value chain. I've been reading a lot, just like you, about, what's been happening in relation to the foundation of the technology, to the point that you made with Bitcoin and sort of how it's the underpinning and how it's driving that. But then also, I've been hearing a lot of hype about what it's going to do to revolutionize the insurance industry and potentially disrupt insurance, But overall, I think, in practicality, it's so far been just that, right? With carriers trying to get a clear understanding of what it really means for them in order for them to be able to create a full stack solution. So I know it's in its early infancy stages, as you alluded to, but where do you see some of the opportunities for blockchain to enhance the overall insurance value chain?
The whole hype, or I guess existence of blockchain for that matter, really is in sort of displacing intermediaries. So the essence of it, if you will, is that you don't need the intermediary because we're all transacting on this open source blockchain, and these trades get adjudicated and you have the proof of work that validates and all that. So it's the whole premise of blockchain, whether you go to its purity of the Bitcoin or look at it in the context of other financial services like insurance, it's really a trust factor. And so it's so hard to predict where it goes, but I've had a lot of thoughts around what are some of the interesting use cases for blockchain. One that jumps to mind is around title insurance, right? You buy a home, actually, oddly enough, Iowa, where I live, you don't have title insurance. We have legal abstracts, but every other state but Iowa, of course, Iowa is always unique. Every other state but Iowa has title insurance. So you go to buy a home, you want to make sure you have clear title. You want to make sure there's no impairment of the title to the home you're buying. So you buy this title insurance. It's usually about 1% of the purchase price, give or take where you live. And so you buy this title property, and really all you're doing is making sure that the property that the owner is selling to you is something that you own clear and free, and there's no impairment on the title. Well, I look at this and say, you know, that's okay. You pair a land registry with this kind of technology. You know, could you someday have a total replacement of title insurance? I don't know. Maybe. So I look at stuff like that. I look at, you know, are there efficiencies someday that would be built into a system? I look at it not necessarily as disrupting the business of insurance, but more, is there a claims process that could be smoothed out? Possibly. Are there fraud prevention things that could happen? Yeah, I think so. Are there just general efficiencies that could be put into the operations? Yeah, probably most definitely. Will it be on a truly distributed ledger? I don't know. It might be more on what I would kind of consider a secure blockchain or an end-to-end one. And, you know, and then if you look at it that way, is that really just centralizing the blockchain, so to speak, which kind of defeats the purpose? But I always come back to this. It's like consumers really don't care what the technology is that's delivering them their value. They just want to have their claim paid timely. They want things to happen smoothly, whether it's done on a blockchain or some sort of other digital platform. You know, I don't think consumers really care. But that's really where the industry needs to step back and say, well, what are some of the legitimate use cases? And when you look at this and do your conventional, you know, CBA, cost-benefit analysis, which I'm sure every insurer has a process for, you know, you have to then decide where do you want to deploy your money, which ones are actually adding value to your members, which ones are going to help you grow your business, bring down your expenses. So there's a lot of things, and when you're in an insurance company like we are, you know, it's really hard to work on the business because we're always working in the business. But that's why the consortiums are interesting to follow, because I always say a group of people is always better than one person. It's always good to get that outside perspective and sort of learn what other companies may or may not be doing. You know, will we end up with some sort of DAO, you know, some sort of decentralized autonomous organization that's running a blockchain that has smart contracts that totally replace insurance? I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. I would even argue that that might not be insurance. So, you know, I think we're going to have a lot of interesting debates over all of this technology, what it means to regulators, what it means to consumers, the industry. But I think there are several use cases that I see down the pike, and you know, I see in the reinsurance space. You know, could you have some interesting ability to create efficiency there? Absolutely. So there's a lot of different use cases.
Yeah, you know, and I want to go back to a point that you made, Nick. You know, one of the things that you said was, and it really rings true, is that, you know, consumers really don't care about the underpinnings and the underlying technology that's driving what they're hoping to get out of the insurance company. I think what they do care about is that in the event of a claim, you know, that claim is going to be paid and, you know, they're going to be made whole to the terms of the contract. Now, when I see sort of what you're talking about in regards to the legitimate use cases, you know, one of the things that you mentioned, and again, this is sort of one of the underlying foundations of blockchain, is that concept of trust and weeding out fraud within the process because of the visible distributed ledger, you know, that's a part of that technology. And I think sort of long term, as you start to see that play out, if it's if it's truly, you know, leveraging the open concept of blockchain, then you'll start to see things impact the consumer, potentially like lower costs and things that play into that because of weeding out fraud and those sorts of things. You know, so as I'm thinking about that, what I also think about is, you know, hearing a lot about blockchain as a platform that can then drive innovation in other areas of the insurance value chain in order to help that consumer. And that includes things like, you know, connecting with technology such as IoT or connected devices and so on, as you, again, start thinking about the platform as the foundation, you know. And, you know, this aligns with the original concept that you talked about around the distributed ledger. You know, so what do you see as some of the benefits of merging blockchain with other technologies? And do you think that this at some point will drive overall change within the insurance value chain?
I do. And here's, that's a great point, because to really get to the point where you realize the utopia that some predict for blockchain or its full potential, whatever you want to call it, and have it as a transformational business opportunity, you absolutely have to leverage the other technologies almost in parallel. I would throw in the analytics, you know, artificial intelligence, IoT, as you mentioned, you know, and that's why looking at all of the stakeholders together, you know, that's how you would somehow, you know, leverage all of this to mean really transformation, not only in insurance, but other areas of financial services. So, you know, I don't think you can look at it on its own. I don't think you can be testing it really on its own, because at the end of the day, on its own, in my humble opinion, and again, I'm not an expert, but I've studied a lot, you know, in my own opinion, I don't think that on its own, it's much more than a kind of transactional system. It's profound, it is revolutionary, but to really get to a transformational spot, I do think you have to pair it with these other technologies that are out there, IoT being one, analytics being, I mean, those are the things that really would drive a transformational change, really in how we all conduct business and many other industries, but certainly in insurance.
Absolutely. And I think about that, especially with a lot of the early adopters around things like, you know, IoT and, you know, connected devices and so on. And as you mentioned, you know, pairing it with it to drive that transformation. So what do you think about, you know, if some organizations or let's say incumbents or even new entrants, you know, adopt the technology early, you know, do you think that over time they'll potentially have a competitive advantage in the insurance space?
I do think you always have a little competitive advantage. The interesting thing I've learned about the insurance business is there's a lot of companies that are very good at being fast followers. You know, that's something that you've probably heard a lot. There's a lot of folks that will kind of live and die by, hey, we're going to be a fast follower, or we may not be on the leading edge. We're not going to be on the bleeding edge. You hear that a little bit, too, in our industry. So I think, you know, it is really probably some advantage to be in first to market. There's, you know, but I do think a lot of other carriers are going to be able to catch up when those use cases really start to have some profound impacts, such as, you know, and again, we're not even talking about the regulatory issues that would come with smart contracts, that would come with some of the things that are out there if you end up with the full transformational potential. But I do think you have to step back and realize in any industry, certainly insurance, a highly regulated one, you have to step back and realize, well, what am I really doing here? What is the goal? What am I trying to do? And what am I trying to transform, and why? And then you have to step back and realize, you know, how am I going to get there? Is the blockchain the right tool? I think depending on who you talk to, there's absolute bulls in it and there's absolute bears in it. I'm kind of, you know, I'm bullish about the technology. The use cases I've seen out there, certainly in the ICO space and some other, you know, don't make sense. Some of the use cases I've seen in insurance aren't baked yet, but I do believe that there's going to be some revolutionary things that happen with it. I'm not going to predict what exactly, but I do think there's some very interesting things that could happen with it. But before it really works, we have to figure out, you know, is it really a blockchain? I've seen so many things out there that have been publicized as blockchain things that are in proof of concept that aren't blockchains. It's just digitizing a process, which is different. So I have a couple of experts I ping things off of that develop these platforms and have fun doing it. And we spend a lot of time talking about what is a real blockchain protocol versus a digitized platform. And back to that point we had earlier, the consumer probably doesn't care. But as a company, you really want to drive efficiency, drive value. If you can drive down expense, you know, if you can combine it like we talked about earlier, you can start to have a real transformation of your business. But to get to the point where the blockchain makes sense, you have to get around this proof of work issue. So Bitcoin, you know, the miners, as you probably well know, they mine it and they solve the problems and then they get Bitcoin. You know, Ethereum miners get Ether. So, you know, some of the platforms that are out there, like, I'm very fascinated by Stellar Networks, which is probably the best blockchain protocol I've seen. You have to get around what is the mining issue to scale it. And I think that once you figure that out through different protocols, I've read about a voting protocol, a gossip protocol, you know, there's different ways to do it, but a lot of the stuff I've seen really isn't blockchain per se. It's really more of a digitized process. And so I'm very fascinated kind of by some of these companies that have created sort of a centralized blockchain, which I know kind of defeats the purpose, but I've read about some companies that are doing that. The credit card companies, for instance, are all over this. You know, they're not real ready to cede their ground. And so, you know, you're going to see a lot of interesting things happen probably outside of insurance first. You'll then see it happen in our industry as well, maybe in tandem, maybe a little bit later, I don't know. But it's something that most people certainly need to start studying to understand where your organization fits in on this, if it needs to. And if you start to see things that emerge, you'll be able to say, okay, that makes sense. Let's try something like that.
I think that makes a lot of sense. And again, I want to touch upon something that you mentioned. And, you know, you said a couple of times, which makes perfect sense, that, you know, organizations need to figure out whether or not blockchain is even the right technology, you know, to base, you know, what they're trying to do on. And to the point that you made around, you know, some folks calling things blockchain, that's really a digitization of a potential business process or a process in general. You know, so I'm thinking about back to a couple of months ago, you know, I had the opportunity to sit with Dan Schreiber, the chief executive officer of Lemonade. And what we talked about was the use of AI to drive automated claims payment, which in turn, at least from the perspective of what Lemonade is doing, reduces the LAE or the loss adjustment expense. Now, you know, while we talked about this working really well on low complexity claims, you know, at least where the technology stands today in terms of how they're using it. Now, you know, when I think about what we're talking about here today with blockchain, you know, I see that as a way to potentially automate claims payment through enforcing the terms, as we were talking about earlier, of that smart contract by potentially verifying, you know, the terms and conditions and what goes along with that. But when I'm looking at it, I'm looking at it less from the perspective of the lower complexity claim types, and then more from the perspective of claims that could potentially have a different level of complexity, a higher level of complexity, you know, whereby this could potentially be removing costs and so on. But, you know, overall, Nick, you know, do you see this as a way for carriers to then begin to control LAE on more complex claim types in comparison to just using AI? And if you do see it that way, you know, what do you think the advantage is over, you know, just using artificial intelligence in the claims process through also leveraging blockchain as a platform?
That, when I think about blockchain use cases and going back to marrying it up with other technologies, that's really something that the claims process, to me, again, as a former commissioner, I look at the claims process as hopefully a pristine process where people are treated fairly with dignity. Obviously, there's a contract there, but at the same time, it's, you know, for a lot of these folks, I always said, you buy insurance hoping you never use it. If you ever have to use it, you want to have your claim paid fairly and timely. And you know, while I look at Lemonade and some of the simple transactions that got adjudicated in 3 seconds or less, you know, I put my commissioner hat on and say, well, what happens when you adjudicate or deny one in 3 seconds? I mean, that consumer is going to be pretty pissed off. Excuse my language. So, you know, I think you have to figure out that there are people at the end of these contracts, and we want to, in my business where we serve our members, you know, we want to make sure that those people are treated with absolute dignity, treated fairly, and recognizing that at that time, on the more complex cases, at least in our business, it's probably a pretty darn bad day for that person, whether it's a death in a family, a total loss of a house, a farm. And so, you know, while I love the technological things that are happening, I do believe very strongly in this is going to be a relationship business for a long time. Certainly the people that we serve, our 370,000 members, a lot of those folks, you know, if all they got was a tap here and get paid, you know, the person they're dealing with goes to church with them. The person they're dealing with probably coaches a Little League team. And, you know, it might not matter to a lot of folks in other markets, but in our markets, that matters. And I think we have to step back and realize, you know what, if it can make it quicker and take care of that person, fine. But I know from my own experience having a couple significant claims, there is some value in making sure that that person is being treated fairly, having someone to talk to. Some days these agents that are out there, even your home office staff, you know, they're as much a counselor some of those days as anything else, helping that person get through a really bad day or a bad week or bad month, who knows. And so I do think that there's some utility in creating more efficiencies. But if I look at the complex claims that come through our office and the ones I saw as commissioner, a lot of Iowans and people in the Midwest especially, you know, they don't want to have a chatbot. They want to talk to somebody. They want to be taken care of. They want someone to come and witness what's happened, and they want to be a part of that. And part of your job in our industry is to take care of your job is to take care of people. That's your job. And that's why insurance is so important and why I love the business so much. But I always say we got to get better at it. We've got to meet people where they're at. We have to be able to, I always say I'm not a big fan of omnichannel. I'm more like the omnipresent. We have to be able to meet their expectations when they have their expectations. We have work to do there as an industry for sure, and I think we're going to get there as an industry. But, you know, I don't think we're going to have any time real soon, a lot of our members at least, want it to be handled that way. Now, I think we need to look out ahead and realize that might change, and there might be different expectations in different markets with different claims, and there might be people that, yeah, I just want to click here, take a picture, and have it. Absolutely. And I do think in those cases, you know, you could envision a scenario where it's easier to track your claim. Fraud gets taken down. It's a much smoother claims process. You probably can detect the malicious activity that's out there. Right now, depending on who you listen to, you know, there's billions of dollars in fraudulent claims that are paid out. Well, we all pay between $400 and $700 annually for that. So, you know, those are the studies that are out there. And if you can drive that down and you can be someone that's going to be able to take care of your people, treat them with dignity, treat them well, that's a winning recipe to me. But I don't really see a lot of the carriers that are dealing with these complex claims really wanting to get out of that personal relationship they have with their clients, their members. And when I talk to my InsurTech brethren and sisters around the whole idea of disruption of insurance, I kind of hate the word disruption insurance because when people get disrupted, usually bad things happen. And so I do like transformation. I think we all have work to do there, as I said. But it's still a relationship business for a lot of folks. And there's a reason that a lot of companies have 90%+ retention. Again, I think there are a lot of those things. Now, the more it becomes a commodity and the more that those things start to transform, yeah, I think what we talked about actually makes sense. You're going to have to be able to be available to be more transactional and have it paid quicker because someone else will figure it out if you don't, and that's when you start to lose business. So it's an interesting space to be in because you kind of have to balance, like I say, almost five generations of customers from what I call a super senior all the way to Gen Z. And, you know, you have to be omnipresent, available to do business on their terms the way they want to, which is very challenging but presents a lot of opportunity. And at that claims moment, that's that moment of truth. And really, I feel like if we don't do a good job there, we shouldn't be here. We shouldn't be doing what we do.
And I have to say, I love the way you put this. You know, insurance absolutely is a people business, especially when you think about what's happening with the higher complexity claim types. And you're absolutely right. You know, especially as I speak to claims adjusters, for folks that, to your point, they're, you know, when they're having these larger complex claims, they're not exactly having the best of days, you know, so they use folks like the adjusters and people that can give them a human touch, sort of that human touch, you know, to really be able to find comfort in knowing that their situation is going to be taken care of and it's going to be taken care of well. You know, it's funny that you mentioned you hate the word disruption. You know, even though I use the term in one of the questions, I absolutely sort of feel the same way. I actually tend not to use the word disruption, and I always tend to use the word innovation in its place, right? Because to your point, you know, someone is being disrupted, and that may not be the greatest of things that's occurring there, you know, from a disruption perspective. So, I think we're pretty much similar when it comes to that.
Absolutely. You know, real quick on that point, you know, I hear a lot about people saying, oh, we're going to disrupt the life insurance industry. And I think about that, I'm like, okay, if you think about that playing out to its almost illogical conclusion, I guess, if that were to happen, you know, the life insurance industry, pretty much the number one supplier of capital for, you know, municipal and public projects and through infrastructure, you know, the whole financial system would collapse. And so, I get a little, you know, sensitive when I hear that. Because if that were to happen, you know, if the life insurance industry really got disrupted and went away, you know, I tell people all the time, it's like, well, you know, we're all going to be eating grass in our backyard because we're going to be living through a really bad financial crisis of some kind. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I just feel like innovation, transformation, and pushing ourselves in the industry to do better every day is very important. And I think, you know, a lot of companies are doing that, and we're leveraging different ways of doing it. Absolutely.
Yeah, you know, I think I have to agree with you there. So, you know, we talked a lot about blockchain, but Nick, beyond blockchain, you know, what do you see as the leading technologies that could potentially be leveraged, you know, to drive positive change within the insurance value chain?
Right now, there's, if you're sitting in the chair of strategy or planner, or you're trying to work in an operations role of an insurance company, it's deafening right now. There's so much happening out there. It is almost hard to kind of, you know, siphon through what makes sense. So, you know, I try to keep it pretty simple for myself in terms of, you know, what is going to actually add value to a potential member, a current member. How are we going to increase our personal touch to do our job better with those people? I look a lot at creating this sort of a omnipresent, you know, agent, if you will, helping that agent be bigger than he or she is. I think that anything that's going to be able to help that agent communicate, you know, whether it's some sort of a chat function that's available when they're not there, something that's going to be able to make it simpler to onboard those customers. You know, I'm very much interested in the use of data, both to help streamline, you know, fraudulent claims out, but also to streamline some onboarding in. And so I think that, you know, I'm on the board of Carpe Data. It's a, you know, full disclosure, but, you know, that's really where I'm interested in is what are these plays that can integrate into this, and what are the plays that are out there that are creating platforms like Assurify, my friend Gregory Bailey's company, Denim. These are companies that are making insurance companies better than they are and helping us, you know, connect with people where they're at. Yeah, that's kind of the thing. If you talk to any agent or insurance company, everyone's looking for growth. We're all looking for the same people. And we're all using traditional ways to find these folks. You know, direct mail still works. That's kind of a newsflash out there, but it does still work. But you have to look to what's next and how are you going to find the next customer and how are you going to onboard them efficiently to make it so that their experience doesn't suck. I mean, that's, at the end of the day, you want to make it so the experience is a good experience. They go and they talk to their friends and neighbors. And so I look for these sorts of technologies that are going to create more efficiency when we onboard people, help us interact down the road with our client members when, you know, they want to. Some of these technologies that are going to be able to help us help our agents find more people, you know, those are interesting to me as well. But I tell you, there's, I don't know, 2,500 startups. I've probably talked to 300 of them, if I had to guess, over the last 5 years. And there's a lot of smart people doing a lot of smart things. But if you're sitting in my chair and you're going to go to your management team or your board of directors, if it's that big enough, you know, we are in a business of promises that we have to keep. And so any advice to the startups out there, it's like surround yourself with good people, but it, you know, it's a slow sales process because you're asking companies that are 75 to 100 years old in some cases that have strong value prop and reputations to do a deal, if you will, with some company that started 6 months ago. So it's a slow sales process. I know people get frustrated by it. And again, most companies could probably do a little bit better job there, but you know, there is a reason that some of this takes time because it's pretty hard to go to your management team and, you know, tell them, hey, we cut this great deal. We have this awesome experience for these customers that are going to come on board and then figure out, well, hey, they didn't have enough funding and they're done. You know, I mean, a lot of these startups are going to fail. I mean, most will. And so you have to be smart in who you're picking to do your deals with, who's got the right funding. When you do your diligence, you know, who's got the right advisors and people that actually can spell insurance around them. Those are the people that I look for when I'm trying to figure out what idea to bring into this company. And I think I'm very intrigued, again, data, how that's being used, how can we help our agents find customers. There's just a lot of things going on out there. But my focus is really more in that arena versus even sort of the blockchain stuff right now.
And thinking about what you mentioned, just in regards to your focus being in that arena, but then also talking about where some of these startups are that's hoping to be able to innovate. You know, I think you're absolutely right. So me personally, I'm also an advisor to a couple of startups, and then also to private equity funds that are looking to invest in new insurtech startups as well. And what I've sort of been seeing over time is, there's a lot of these startups that may not have a lot of funding or may not have the right people, and then they fail, and then their customer base sort of goes away with them because of the way that the deal was structured there. So you do wind up seeing a lot of that. And for me, that always begs the question, is it better for, let's say, an incumbent carrier that has to keep that promise to pay the claim to begin innovating more from within? Or, is it still okay for them to continue to work with or partner with, get into some contracts with some of these startup organizations that are hoping to transform what's happening in insurance? You know, so Nick, just thinking about it from your perspective, do you think insurers will be able to continue to effectively innovate from within? Or do you see it as somewhat of a hybrid between partnering or being in contracts with startup organization as well as innovating from the inside?
I think you're going to have to look at it. I don't think you can have it one or the other per se. I think there's got to be a little bit of a balance. The reality is, the whole idea that insurance companies, IT teams are going to build these platforms and do that, I mean, that's a pretty long shot for most carriers, to be frank. But I do think you have to innovate from within first. So you have to come from a point of, having buy-in from management team, from the leadership team. You have to, kind of change mindsets first. So I think, innovating from within really starts around building that consensus and the buzz and the will to change. And then you have to really kind of have some wins. You got to put a couple wins on the board, because it's pretty easy to go do what you did yesterday when you don't have a couple wins come through. And then for us, again, I look at, building the innovation council, getting a budget to try new things, having the backing of the CEO to say, look, we're going to spend this money and not treat it like we normally do, and we're going to spend it on different things. And if they don't work, well, hopefully we learn something. And so that's a radical move for most insurance companies to try things and not be fired for failing. And so we have to do a better job of the mindset, I think. And so you have to innovate from within. But I look at innovation, it's really nothing more than collaboration. So if you think about every great thing that we have in front of us today, we love our iPhones, all of these things were collaborative things that were, several layers of iteration through time to get to where they are. So you really have to build these teams of collaborators. I'm very big on cross-functional teams, getting people in a room. We had a session today on new ideas, and my God, it was the best 90 minutes I've had in a long time of these unbelievably talented people I work with, listening to them talk about what they are. Every company has amazing talent sitting in their company. I know that. It's your job to find it, to bring it forward, to foster it, to let it, to water it, let it grow, and get out of the way. And so I think the companies that do that are going to do very well. And I'm very fortunate to work with a group of people that are doing that, want to do it. But I don't think you need to have everybody be innovators. You just need to have a team of the willing. You got to have the full support of executive leadership and management. But you got to do it from within first on a mindset. You then shift to how we're going to do it. Some companies might go with, hey, we're going to build it and run it. To me, if I look at a Surify platform or some of these other platforms that are out there, and I have invested in those guys and know those guys, but you're not going to build that. I mean, it's just not something you're going to build. And so I think you have to step back and realize there are times where it's okay to partner with a startup. It's okay to partner with some of those folks. And some of the startups that have been out there that I've advised, it's probably a smart play for them to integrate into another platform somewhere else with a more seasoned company that a lot of us already have contracts with, right? So, there's so many ways that the startup could legitimize him or herself by becoming part of someone else's platform. And maybe you don't make as much money, but you're going to get to market quicker and you're going to make plenty of money. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, if you're taking care of people and you're doing something worthwhile, yeah, money's important. But, you know, if you run in your whole existence based on how much money you're going to make or want to make, well, you're not going to make it anyway. So figure out a way to get to market. Figure out a way that you can actually add value in the ecosystem. And again, if I look 5 years out, I can kind of see what's going to come. 10 years out, it gets a lot more foggy. And so I think a lot of these entrepreneurs have to really step back and say, well, what do I want to do? Why am I doing what I'm doing? What's my best way, you know, to market? What's the product I have? How does it fit in? And how am I going to improve what's going on today with an eye towards the future? So I think it's pretty smart to, if I were a startup, looking for different distribution outlets, because going company to company trying to sell a service or product is pretty damn hard. If you can integrate it and someone already has some of that, you know, that's pretty smart. And for us, it's much easier to partner with someone we already have a relationship with, obviously. But I wouldn't be opposed to, you know, working with a company that's relatively new. But I am going to ask them, okay, well, what's your funding and what's your capital? And you're going to look at their balance sheet and try to figure out, you know, what's the likelihood they're going to be here in a year. Absolutely. That's a tough call.
Absolutely. You know, and I think that makes absolute sense, because you never know where they're going to be. And you don't know what if they're going to be one that's wildly successful or a company that would take the unfortunate path of potentially failing, you know. So so I absolutely agree with that. You know, so Nick, you know, one of the questions that I always like to ask, you know, folks like yourself with this deep subject matter expertise is especially around innovation, you know, is if someone is listening to our discussion here today, right? I mean, if they wanted to just do things differently and think differently about their role in order to buck the trend of that status quo way of thinking, you know, from your perspective, just in the spirit of innovation, you know, what advice would you give that person to provide additional value and to innovate different areas within their organizations?
First, you have to understand the business you're in. I think a lot of people jump to great ideas without really understanding the industry, even their own company, to be honest with you. So I always say it's good. You got to understand, you know, the business you're in. If you're in the business of insurance, it's, you know, it's not rocket science. It's complex, but it's not rocket science. You know, we're here to take care of people. We're here to help people when they most need it. And if you're here to protect those lives and those future, like that's our kind of our purpose, you know, that level sets you a little bit to then, okay, well, what am I going to do to add value? And I always tell folks, you know, you're going to be the same exact person you are today a year from now, but for what you read and the people you meet. And so I love, you know, I personally look for different people to connect with that really have, you know, I have no idea what the hell they do, but I like talking to them. I had, you know, lunch today with a guy that is not in our industry, and I learned a ton of stuff. And so I always look to, you know, how can I then take some of those ideas? Are they relevant to what we do in the insurance industry? Are they not relevant? And then you always look for different ways to do things better, do things differently. And I think you have to really be willing to challenge yourself. And really, what is my, you know, what is my own why? Why am I here? What am I trying to do? And if you don't really understand that, it's going to be pretty hard to do much. And I think you have to really, you have to dig in. You have to read a lot. You have to try to. I always say, you know, I have a leadership class I do where you have to be willing to do what others won't. And you know, most people don't do the simple stuff. Whether it's follow through, follow up. You know, you want to be a trusted resource within your organization. You want to be likable. You want to be, I mean, it's all, you know, you can have the best technical skills, Abel, but if you don't have decent communication skills, if you don't have good personal skills, if you don't have decent self-awareness of what your weaknesses are, you ain't going to make it. And so I always tell folks, you know, the more you can sort of reflect on who you are and take some time and stock every day, you know, about what you did. You know, I have work journals I've kept for years, and I always write down, you know, who I met and why and when and would I ever, you know, hire them someday. And I tell a story about when I left office in December of 16, the staff that I worked with there, I was lucky enough to work with. I wrote many of them hand notes. Well, my deputy commissioner, who's now the commissioner of insurance, I met him 10 years before at an industry event. And I got at that time, he was the Missouri insurance commissioner. And I got his business card, and he and I had a great conversation. On the back of it, I wrote, pretty good guy. I could see working with him today. He knows what he's doing, et cetera. You know, so when I left office, I gave Doug this card with his business card in it. And you know what? It's those connections that really will help you transform, because if you don't get the people around you to buy into you, if you don't get those folks to help you, you got nothing. I mean, because none of us are going to be able to do anything alone. And so I always say, you know what? You got to be technically proficient. You got to do all that, but you really have to be able to help support other people. And I'm very fortunate that, you know, I work with a group of leadership here that are all very, very good to work with, very supportive. Our CEO gives absolute credit where it's due. And you know what? You can never go wrong by giving too much credit, because at the end of the day, you're going to get more than you probably deserve anyway. And so I always say, you know, if you really want to transform yourself, start by giving more to others and doing more for others and helping other people for nothing. And you'll be kind of amazed, really, what you can accomplish, because then it's like, okay, other people want to help you, whether it's within your business, your community, other things, because you know what? None of us are going to be able to do this alone. And I think you have to have that group of people that buy into you. And once you get that, it's pretty amazing what you can accomplish, because the folks that are around, they are all ripe with good ideas. And if you can somehow channel their good ideas to drive agendas forward, that's fun. That's a great spot to be in. It's a lot of fun. And so every company, I think, has those folks all over them. And, you know, it's hard to find them. But, you know, one of the things I love doing is just talking to people and figuring out, you know, why do they work here? What do they want to do? And is there something that we can do together or not? And when I meet people outside of the building, same kind of a thing. What can I do? How can we help each other? Is there something there or not? And sometimes there is, sometimes there's not, but, you know, you just want to make sure that you're always aware of the people that are around you and that are out there that can help you, that you can help them. And you don't do it, you don't do this stuff, you know, with any agenda in mind. You just do it to hopefully make yourself better. If you make yourself better, you're going to transform yourself. And then guess what? You transform the place you work.
Absolutely. You know, I think that's great. And you know, to the point that you made, you know, connecting with people and talking to people with different backgrounds and different thoughts, that's really going to help you to drive the way that you're thinking about things, which could potentially spark something that's going to make what you're doing even better for the organization. And then to the point where you made, you know, about the people and, you know, giving as much credit as possible. You know, I personally believe that, you know, people should give credit when things go right to their team and their people. But for me, I always take the blame when things go wrong, right? So to continue to build up the credibility and the expertise of my people, and then continue to, you know, hone in on what that expertise may be for them, you know, as they're trying to innovate or change their organization. So, you know, I love the way that you sort of pulled that advice together, Nick. So, you know, I do, Nick, want to say thank you for your time here today. I truly appreciate the discussion around, you know, your thoughts on blockchain and insurance and just on innovation in this industry in general. You know, if someone wanted to learn more about the organization that you're with or just about what you do, you know, how could I get them in contact with you?
You know, I'm pretty active on Twitter at Nick Gerhart, LinkedIn. You know, I do quite a bit on that as well. You know, those are pretty good platforms that, you know, I you know, drop me a LinkedIn message there, connect with me, and be happy to talk to people offline. I do it all the time.
Perfect. Well, Nick, once again, I do want to say thank you for your time here today. I truly appreciate it. And, you know, I'm very confident that the listeners of this podcast is going to get a lot of value out of what we discussed.
I hope so. It's good to be with you, and I wish you the best of luck. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. You know, I hope you enjoyed the discussion with myself and Nick Gerhart on blockchain and the implications or the benefits to the insurance industry and just insurance innovation in general. You know, so there's a couple of other discussions, specific topics that I'm going to be talking about later, like cyber and some other things. So just continue to tune in so you'll hear from myself and the innovators and influencers in this industry. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.